There's not a lot known about raising polar bear cubs, so it's been a new experience for me. But she's been very, very good, very consistent. She requires so much more attention that couldn't be done at the zoo as easily. It's just easier to do it here.
That was a local news segment from 1982 about Gail Hedberg. Hedberg is the senior vet tech and neonatal specialist at the San Francisco Zoo. At that time, one of the polar bears had a mom who couldn't take care of her any longer, so Hedberg decided she would and took her home. The bear's name is Pika. Today, Pika is 30 years old. You may have seen her photo on muni buses and banners for the San Francisco Zoo. When she was born, only 5 polar bears had ever survived after being hand-reared in captivity. She was number 6, thanks to Hedberg. Since then, Hedberg has done some of the field's most significant research in how we care for polar bear cubs and other exotic animals. This year, she's retiring from the zoo. KALW's Liz Pfeffer has more.
Here she comes. She's walking out now. She's looking to see. You notice there's lots.
Sometimes when Pika sees Gail Hedberg, it almost looks like she recognizes her.
This is great. She's like, oh. She's trying to chase the apple that's in front of her. Yay!
Gail and Pika don't have a lot of contact anymore. And that's a good thing. It means the bear is well adjusted.
She's oblivious to us watching. You see, she's totally in her world. So this is a true success of a 30-year-old bear having a day that is classic. This is what we strive for every day.
Gail is the zoo's resident expert on raising baby exotic animals. Over the past 3 decades, she's raised white lions and tigers for Siegfried and Roy, giraffes for Michael Jackson. She even spent 4 months sleeping on a cot in the zoo's gorilla house so that she could hand-rear a newborn without separating it from the group.
People tell me I have a gift when it's to the hand-rearing.
You could say that what really put her on the path of becoming a hand-rearing expert was her work with Pika, that polar bear cub she took home 30 years ago. Pika has now lived twice as long as most bears in the wild, thanks to the intensive attention she got in Hedberg's Fremont living room. It's important to note that this kind of practice wouldn't happen today. The zoo has a larger staff now and different animal policies. But at the time, Gail was navigating uncharted territory.
This is the famous video. Yeah.
So here in under the dining room table, the cat knew that she could be away and not have to deal with the bear.
Gail and her husband Kent still live in the same house where Pika was their guest for 6 months. In her living room, she shows me old pictures and videos set to cheesy music.
And then the cat said, I'm out of here. And the poor cub is so frustrated. She's like, I just wanted to play.
The videos are grainy, but YouTube ready. Pika the polar bear cub and Daisy the house cat making each other's acquaintance.
Well, what really was happening is we were documenting on a weekly basis her development and the type of care that she was receiving.
From the day she was born, Pika was in Gail's hands. She actually could lay in the palm of a hand. She was vulnerable and totally immobile.
I mean, Gail brought her home for the first day, and I looked at her, and here was this little pink thing that had no hair and you know, eyes were still closed. And when you think that in their natural environment, they're born in a snow cave.
Polar bear cubs in the wild spend 3 months in their dens, using their mother's body heat for warmth. Gail and Kent had to improvise.
They actually had 3 incubators. There was one at the zoo, there was one in the van, and there was one at home. So, you know, there was always a warm incubator, ready to go.
Like any baby, Pika could get cranky. But when she was happy, boy, was she happy.
The unique sound that I wanted to share with you was the sound of contentment. And this is the sound that polar bear cubs make. And we can show that to you. We call that sound, we nicknamed it, it's called motorboating.
Photos and cute videos aside, having Pika was work. They had to build a special enclosure in the middle of their living room. Gail was constantly feeding her, sterilizing her environment, and assessing her teething cries.
And just to let you know how loud it was, we had to go to our next door neighbors and tell them that we had a teething bear inside the house because the screams were so loud and we didn't want them to think that we were, beating a child over here.
You might be wondering if the whole neighborhood came knocking on the door to see the baby polar bear. Well, for the most part, Gail and Kent were able to keep it under wraps, except for the few times Pika had leash training out front.
This particular day, there was an older gentleman that pulled out of his driveway right across the street, and he stopped right in front of us, and he rolled down his window, and he said, shook his head, "That's not a dog." And then he drove on.
At 6 months, Pika was ready to go back to the zoo, and too big to have human contact, even with the woman who raised her. But the experience had real consequences. After Pika's story came out, different zoos started contacting Gail asking for nursery records and recommendations, and she realized she wasn't sure what to tell them. The whole time she had Pika, she was making educated guesses about what she needed to eat. She looked at scientific literature, but there just wasn't much out there. To find out for sure, she'd need to analyze what was really in wild polar bear milk.
Well, how do you go about that? You can't just go to some milk bank and say, I want to check out some samples and do nutritional analysis.
In the end, she worked with a group called Polar Bears International to get milk samples from wild bears in Norway. What she learned was that bears need fats from fish and seals, and that totally changed the formula recipe. In 2011, her findings were published in the journal Zoo Biology. At the same time, as melting ice made it hard to find food, more and more cubs were being stranded in the wild. Knowing how to care for them in captivity became critical.
So, which mom is this?
Rosa.
Good work, Rosa.
These days at the zoo, Gail is tending to a couple of one-day-old San Clemente Island goats. Since Gail took care of Pika in her living room, she has hand-reared hundreds of different animals.
I think one of my most favorite in the hoofstock was doing a rhino. I've done several giraffe. Then I've done some primates.
Hand-rearing is only a portion of what it takes to raise an exotic animal in captivity. But it's important, and there's a special knack for it that you can't learn in school. That's why Gail's hoping to pass on her knowledge, even though she's retiring this year.
I'm retiring from the zoo, but I'm not retiring from the work.
She's leading her first workshop next year, called The Art and Science of Hand-Rearing. And because there isn't a lot of literature about it, she's hoping to create a network for exotic animal caretakers worldwide. I mean, imagine if you could pick up the phone and talk to someone who has, for instance, hand-reared a cotton-top marmoset, or even a polar bear. I'm Liz Pfeffer for Cross Currents.